From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
This week on the program, we have a great panel of experts, starting with Dr. Joyce Epstein, the co-director of the Center on School, Family, and Community Partnerships, and a professor of education at Johns Hopkins University School of Education in Baltimore, Maryland. We'll also be joined by Curtis Lovio and John Kucharik from Farmington Public Schools, and from Talent Together, we'll be joined by Dr. Serena Shivers. We're looking forward to a great program, so stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Joyce Epstein, professor of education from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. Dr. Epstein is also the co-director of the Center on School, Family, and Community Partnerships at the university, and she's joining us today to continue our conversation about homework, its effect on families, and the overall value of it. So welcome to the program, Dr. Epstein.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to talk with you and your audience.
I appreciate it very much. So let's start with a little bit about your history and how you became involved in the research and practice of homework.
We are a center that studies the connections of home, school, and community to help educators work well with all students' families. One of the components of a comprehensive kind of partnership program is the connection between home and school, school and home, about how children are learning and working in school. And, of course, homework is a big part of that story. One of the questions we get most from families is how to help at home when people say you should help your child with homework. And that really opened a question for us about what that really means. And so we started to study the homework process.
Mm-hmm. And how has the perception of homework's value changed over time for you in education from the research and your experience?
Well, you know, there's always been controversy and always, I would call it the annual question of, is homework a good thing or is that not so good for students and certainly for how families are engaged with their youngsters on homework? So the controversy of shall there be homework, how much homework, what should homework be, has really been A, perennial, and B, historic. So that part has not changed. What has changed is we really understand better the questions of what we can do to design homework in a better way to make it a happier and a more fruitful kind of process for all students and for their family engagement.
Mm-hmm. And in your opinion, how have societal changes like family dynamics, technology, influenced sort of the role and expectations of homework in your redesign of it?
Well, the technologies that are now available to some families has certainly been a kind of a force or a helpful kind of approach for some teachers to design homework that enables youngsters to use the technology if they have it at home. Our studies across the country show, however, that we really have to be careful about the equity issues concerning technology. There are families that have easy-to-use technology and can sort of incorporate that into the homework process, and others really who do not have that technology. This came out in the COVID closure period, and we really have to deal with that in terms of how we design homework assignments for students.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you point to a really important part of this discussion, and that is the socioeconomic status of families is a driving force in their access to technology, whether it's a laptop computer, access to the internet and whatnot. And I appreciate your recognition of the effect that COVID had when everyone was sent home from school. In my time as a superintendent, we experienced a substantial divide among families who were far more ready to take on online learning and whatnot. And even as we move past COVID, the nature of homework almost seems connected to technology no matter what. And in the spirit of that, let me ask, why is it important for teachers now to consider the purpose and the design of homework rather than just simply assigning something for students to do after school?
Right. So that's one of the areas that we've been studying and working on most deeply, which is the difference between assigning homework, which just about every teacher from kindergarten through high school does, but we would like to emphasize the importance of the design of homework for what we have found are really 10 different purposes of homework. 9 of them are valid, and each of them requires a different design for the homework assignment. These can be profitable to the youngster in terms of instruction. They can be communicative with families in terms of their design, or they can be helpful to schools and districts in terms of policy. But they really require teachers to consider the purpose for the homework and then design the homework accordingly, taking into account these equity issues of technology and making sure no matter what the purpose and what the design, they are going to be really enjoyable if they are going to include connections with family.
Mm-hmm. So we're currently with Dr. Joyce Epstein, professor of education from Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. And let me follow up on that. You mentioned the need for teachers to consider the nature and the design of homework. Could you give our School Talks listeners maybe one or two examples of how a teacher can differentiate a homework assignment that meets the needs of a diverse classroom of students?
Sure. So a couple of the unique purposes of homework are practice, preparation for the next day's schoolwork, participation that helps youngsters really get into the conduct of, for example, science experiments that they may have watched in class but need to kind of try out themselves at home. Personal development, which is a favorite of mine because youngsters and families really like when teachers assign art, music, construction, design activities that are really opening ideas and opening the talents of students. And then, of course, we have parent and teacher communications, which really help, for example, many youngsters have homework pads or some way that systematically connect the teacher with parents on a pad or on a notebook that help parents see what the children are doing in class. And particularly in our work, parent-child connections. So we have a process called interactive homework, which helps parents see that the youngster can be in charge of a conversation or an interview or a kind of a shared drawing or learning activity that really makes it possible for parents to see and hear what a youngster is learning in class.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the examples of different purposes of homework that require different designs. All of them are important, but teachers really need to know, why am I assigning homework and how can I make this really work for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to continue our discussion about involving parents in homework as part of this process, but I need to take a short break. We'll come back right after this and continue our discussion with Dr. Joyce Epstein. Stay right there.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
We're back here with Dr. Joyce Epstein, professor of education from Johns Hopkins University, talking about homework, its value, and most importantly, how we engage parents in the process. And just before the break, we were talking about the nature and design of homework assignments that in many respects give the student the power in the process of creating an opportunity or an exercise or an assignment at home that engages their parents. And I remember vividly, Dr. Epstein, when I was in high school, my mother learned a lot about trigonometry from my sister. My mother stopped at, I think, algebra or something, never went into trigonometry. So that whole divide between parents' capacity and what students are learning is a valuable one. So I would like to talk to you a little bit about your research and practice with your program known as TIPS, which is Teachers Involve Parents in Schoolwork. Tell us a bit about that program, some of its benefits, and how it's affecting student achievement and parents.
Well, we started to work on the Teachers Involve Parents in Schoolwork process because the most common question from parents was for teachers who gave a message of they should be able to help their child at home. So parents' questions were about what does help mean? We say, and we know from our surveys of parents and from our and other studies, that parents should not, do not want to, must not be asked to teach their child every school subject in every subject area, every grade level, for every ability that their children happen to be in at a particular age or stage. And so we knew that we had to think about the word help. And what we learned was that when we say parents may help with homework, we meant they should be able to encourage, motivate, interact, and really kind of reinforce the importance of homework for their youngster. And the best way to do that, almost in every partnership activity that we really have helped schools to develop, is to give the youngster the responsibility for conducting the activity, for being the star, for being the teacher themselves, and for helping them show and share what they're learning in class with a family partner. Well, how to do that required the design of TIPS activities, which really give the youngster a kind of script on paper that the teachers must assign homework that's really outlined. But if they're going to assign it on paper, the children actually see, well, ask your family partner, for example, what was your hairstyle like when you were my age? Kids and parents love to talk about when the parent was the child's age, at the grade level the child is working, and to have the youngster then write a story about that or draw a picture of what they thought the parent might look like and explain that. And so a kind of a good conversation links to writing or drawing or some kind of reporting that is the child's responsibility. All homework is the child's homework, never the parent's homework.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that strikes a chord with me and probably many teachers over the years who had and continue to feel the pressure to cover the curriculum for some state-driven test. And the drive to cover curriculum, I have found in my experience, often positions teachers to want to cover extra things as a function of homework, which indirectly devalues the homework that they're taking home. I'll give you an example. I remember approaching a student in a hallway years ago, and he and a classmate were assigned 20 questions for homework, all of which were your classic information retrieval, right? You just find it on Google, fill it in on the worksheet, and it's right. over and done with. And this student, who's probably a multimillionaire somewhere, said, yeah, what we did is we got four classmates, and each of us did five questions, and then we just copied the information, and our homework took about 2 minutes. And it really speaks to your work you're doing with tips to make homework productive and valuable in a way that not only the students are owning it, but the parents don't feel held hostage by it at home. And it is an extraordinary challenge. And as you know well, with working families and the challenges of raising children, the idea that we're just going to sit down with a cup of hot chocolate at the kitchen table right after dinner is by far the exception and not the rule. So one last question on tips. Do you see teachers struggling and having any particular challenge when implementing tips? And what kind of support or recommendations would you give them to address those challenges?
There are challenges because when you organize any program, you really have to be systematic about trying to connect the homework assignment with what the teachers are teaching in class. So if the youngster is going to be the explainer or teacher or interviewer of a parent and have a good conversation at home, it's really a little harder for the youngster because they have to really understand what's happening and why this is an important assignment to begin with. That requires the teacher, for example, not only to plan the homework out to match what is being covered in class, but also we suggest going over the homework page or the script that I mentioned, the homework assignment, the TIPS activity, in class for about 5 minutes before the children leave the classroom. So it's not just copy this homework assignment from the board. It's really to prepare the youngster to show, share, and demonstrate what they're learning at home with a family partner, a parent, a sibling, whoever happens to be the communicator at home. So it does take a little bit of work. We do have over 600 prototype activities available for people who might be interested in this on our website, www.partnershipschools.org, in the tips section. And those are in reading and in math and science. And so there are teachers who've worked with us over the years who have really offered these prototypes to show that if you can match our materials or their ideas with your curriculum as a teacher, then half the work is really done for you.
And let me say, this pun is intended. What a great tip on how to find these tips on your website. So, Dr. Joyce Epstein, Professor of Education from Johns Hopkins University in Maryland, I sincerely appreciate your time, your expertise, and really a fresh look at the value of homework from what many of us may have remembered as a kid. So I appreciate your time, and keep up the great work there at the university, and all the best to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Coming up after a word from our sponsors, we'll hear from Curtis Lovio and John Kucharik and all the great things happening in Farmington Public Schools. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program from Farmington Online is Director Curtis Lovio, and joining him is English Language Arts and Social Studies teacher John Kucharik, who also is a virtual learning mentor. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So in the online world, could you give us a solid overview of Farmington Public Schools' online and virtual program?
Sure. First, I'll just say online learning is not new. It has been around in some form or another since the late 2000s, at least in Farmington. But after the pandemic and the years after that time, Farmington really transformed what we offered and streamlined it into what is now Farmington Online. So it's the online programming that we now offer across all 16 of our schools and across K-12. We found that not only did many families really enjoy learning online, but also, we were able to connect so many new families to our district who may have traditionally been homeschooled. So our homeschool families now make up a large part of that population.
And in the spirit of that, what percentage of the student body currently participates in the online or virtual program, and how has that evolved since the pandemic?
Sure. During the actual pandemic, of course, the enrollment was unusually large at that time. But since then, it's stabilized into a more consistent population. Now, we're a large school district of about 10,000 students, and we have about 250 full-time online students. And then if you count just anybody that takes any sort of online class throughout the year, for one reason or another, it gets closer to about 1,000. So still, that's a pretty small percentage if you're looking at the full-time, about 2.5%.
So what you're saying is some of the students who attend school in person can supplement their education with an online course?
Yes, absolutely. And that kind of gets at to the core of what we really offer in Farmington Online. And what that is flexibility for families.
So in the spirit of that, a student who under normal conditions would have a six-period high school day, can they make one of those six an online, or is this beyond the six-hour day?
Yes, and that's actually one of our most popular options right now is our hybrid schedules, where students can have 1, 2, 3 classes in person, 1, 2, 3 classes online. They can really create a custom schedule that works for them. So let's say maybe they have an internship or a special work cooperative opportunity that they can participate in that needs them to attend at a certain time of day, or we have students that are in dual enrollment or college, early college programs, or career and technical education. It allows them to have a really customized schedule to do what they want and need to do in person, and then have the rest of their day online.
And did that develop from the pandemic, or was that in place before the pandemic?
Yeah, great question. So the pandemic really did have our district reimagine what online learning could be. So there really wasn't a true full-time online learning option before that. But yes, since after the pandemic, that's when now not only are we able to offer that flexibility, but if a family wants to be full-time online, they're able to do so as well.
Mm-hmm. So John Kucharik, how do you ensure that virtual classes are as engaging and interactive as an in-person class, given the I guess you'd say the inability to be as hands-on? How do you do that?
Yeah, so over the years, I've had to really reinvent myself as an educator. And, you know, in my spare time, I'm constantly looking for ways to engage students. And, you know, I've even went back to just using like Google Suite and Google Documents, right, where I'm able to monitor what the students are doing, but do it in real time, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that gives me a lot of different options that I didn't have when I was an in-person teacher, right? And one of them is like instantaneous feedback to these students. And, you know, not only using like Google, there's a website called Formative that we use where I'm able to upload questions and again, see if, you know, kids are even doing it or doing it well, or, you know, able to even give recorded feedback to the kids where it's not just writing it out. So, you know, there's been a lot of time and thought and deliberate intentionality in planning very engaging lessons. And, you know, I had spoken with Curtis about it, and the fact that some mornings I'm not commuting, right? So that time that I would take driving and walking into a building, I'm able to plan and prepare additional lessons that maybe I wasn't able to have the time to do.
And given the ability for students to have a hybrid schedule, yeah, are the online students following the same curriculum as, say, a full-time in-person student?
So we try to stay as close to that as we can because of the nature of the program. We do have friends that will join us throughout the year. And one of the things that I've been very deliberate about is trying to seek out coworkers throughout the district. So that way, if a kid's coming from a specific middle school, we're on roughly the same page. So absolutely.
I see. So we're currently with Curtis Lovio and John Kucharik from the Farmington Online program. So Curtis, as a connection to this, how does the program support students' mental health and social emotional well-being in many cases when they're at home? How does that intersect with the normal school day?
Yes, that's one of the biggest and most important concerns that we get from some of our families and the population that's considering online learning. So one thing to know is our teachers, like John Kocharek here, do an amazing job building community and connection in the live class options that we offer as well. Because students not only have a chance to do what would be considered fully online self-paced type work, they're also joining live classes where they're interacting with teachers, where they're able to see their peers, to have discussions with them. So they are getting some connections there. So we do build our own community, and we also make a very explicit effort to connect them to their homeschools as well. So even though we are a K-12 department that serves the entire district, those students are still a part of their home in-person school. They can join clubs, go to after-school activities, join in athletics, still be a part of that. And like our high schoolers, for example, they're still going to prom. They're walking across that same stage at graduation. They really are a part of that school. So we both have our own online community that we build, and they are part of that homeschool community in person as well.
What I appreciate about the extended opportunities available to them, it seems to me would make the ability for them to transition back to in-person completely, if they chose to, that much easier if they're participating in the drama club or whatever extracurricular things are available to them. Seems like a healthy balance between doing some stuff online, but yet still being immersed in the school environment. And in the spirit of that, what is the enrollment process for students who wish to participate online, whether they're in Farmington or wherever?
Yes. So anyone who wants to enroll can do so if they live in Farmington, Farmington Hills. So any resident of the community that would be districted into Farmington schools. We also do serve a handful of students from across Oakland County through the School of Choice process as well. And anyone that wants to enroll just goes to our website. So go to the Farmington Public Schools website, then schools, then Farmington Online. They can find all that information there and to learn much more about the program. And you mentioned the transition back to in person as well, and we absolutely have families that move back and forth between online and in person. That's a regular and expected part that we support. You know, we want students to be in whatever setting works best for them. On learning's not for everybody, not for everybody all the time. One thing we like to say about our student population is that they're with us for a reason and a season.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some reason that they need it, that setting's going to work best for them and their family right now, and it's usually not forever. It's usually for a time. And then they often go back in person.
And one of the things I admire about the work you're doing is you're, at least on its face, you're staying away from the perception that this is somehow alternative, but rather just another option for all kids. And the way that you blend both hybrid and in-person and sort of the ability to go back and forth, I think, makes it that much stronger. So Curtis Lovio and John Kocharek from Farmington Online, I appreciate your time on the program today, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Dr. Serena Shivers from Talent Together. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is Dr. Serena Shivers, the Executive Director of Talent Together, a group dedicated to promoting talent and people to work in education. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So before we get into the heart and soul of Talent Together, can you share with us a little bit about yourself, your educational leadership, and your path that led you to the role of executive director?
Awesome. So this is my 32nd year as a public school educator, and I have been a teacher, I've been a principal, I've been an assistant superintendent at the intermediate school district level, and I was superintendent in Redford, Michigan for 5 years. Prior to becoming the executive director at Talent Together, I spent 4.5 years as a deputy for MASA, which is the state of Michigan Superintendents Association. education. Mm-hmm. So I've done a little bit of everything, mostly here in the state of Michigan, but I've also been an educator in the state of Indiana, Delaware, and Maryland, and spent a small stint working for the Department of Defense Education in England. So
fascinating. Yeah. So you, like me, have worn all the hats in the business.
Absolutely.
And it does, as you know well, it does provide you an important purview when it comes time to deal with any aspect of education. So your experience is noteworthy. So in your role as executive director at Talent Together, what are some of the primary objectives you have coming up in the future?
Well, as you know, Talent Together is actually the nation's largest Grow Your Own program, and it sits right here in the state of Michigan, but it's fairly new. So some of the priorities as we move forward is looking at long-term sustainability of the program, obviously securing ongoing funding, but most importantly, ensuring that we are adding to teacher quality in the candidates that we produce.
Mm-hmm. So just a follow-up question. Do you work with individual school districts as they navigate funding for Grow Your Own, or are you a separate entity from individual districts?
That's an excellent question. I would say both and. We are a separate entity, and Talent Together is a separate program that doesn't work directly with school districts. However, teacher candidates that apply to Talent Together do their experience in the district that they already currently are working mm-hmm. in. So they might be a bus driver, they might be a secretary, they might be a food service worker. Oftentimes, they are a paraprofessional or an assistant already in the classroom. And occasionally, they are long-term subs. So while we are not directly partnered in that way with school districts, certainly we partner with the school districts to ensure that their experience and Talent Together while they are getting their post-secondary education, but more importantly, while they are practicing quote-unquote teaching side-by-side by a master teacher, they are doing it right within the district that they've been serving. And so we work with the school district to make sure that that experience is successful.
That's good to hear. You know, in my time as superintendent, we had a very similar model where we took the opportunity to provide existing staff the opportunity to return to school through the Grow Your Own program. And one of the benefits we found, I think you touched on it a bit, is you have a pool or a cohort of people who are already comfortable working in schools for a number of reasons. Many people find working in schools very unattractive right now, whether it's issues with having to work with children or school safety or whatnot. But when you have a cohort that's already comfortable, be it a bus driver or a substitute teacher, you've already won half the battle in getting them acclimated to being part of the school system. So in your plan through Talent Together, what are some specific strategies you're using to address the current teacher shortage?
Well, the first one you just hit on the head, right? Recruiting people that already are interested in becoming teachers. You mentioned those that may not be interested in teaching, but these are folks that have been passionate about working with kids, and maybe life happened and they didn't get a chance to go on to post-secondary, or maybe they even started a post-secondary degree in something else and realized that working with kids was their passion. Or, you know, sometimes they didn't really know what they wanted to do and they ended up in the school setting and decided that they loved it. So, you know, part of our strategy is starting with those that are interested and making sure that they have a quality experience, but also in removing the barriers that are outside of just funding. Sometimes the barriers may be academics for some people that need additional support. They need tutoring. They need a mentor. They need a coach. And in other cases, oftentimes the barriers that we are removing for them is just an understanding of, hey, nobody in my family went to college. I don't know how to do this thing, right? That's mm-hmm. called post-secondary. And so we have success navigators that are part of our team. And we have coaches. We have a mentor teacher all there to kind of wrap 360 degrees around these teacher candidates and help them come out on the other side as amazing, high-quality teachers.
And that is a noble pursuit. We're currently with Dr. Serena Shivers from Talent Together talking about teacher recruitment and whatnot. So in the mix of all that we have detailed here with regard to staff and whatnot, what would you consider, or at least be one of the biggest challenges facing education today as it relates to teacher recruitment? What is one of the big hurdles?
I think one of the big hurdles is in specialized areas like special education or maybe in the sciences, sometimes mathematics. Sometimes in our rural school districts, there's not a lot of people in the community interested in going into education or either just moving to the community if they are out in rural areas. So access, numbers, and then obviously making sure that we have, particularly in special education, in some hard-to-fill positions. I would say those are our biggest challenges. And then future forward, we have, you know, opportunities in the state of Michigan to look at 3- and 4-year-olds coming into early childhood. So having a teacher workforce that's ready and able to take in some of our youngest, most vulnerable, eager learners is also not necessarily a challenge, but I would say an opportunity that could present itself as a challenge if we don't have a ready-to-go workforce.
And in the same spirit of special education and other groups, in what ways are you working and promoting diversity and inclusion in the workforce? Because as you mentioned, the diversity of the student population we serve demands that level of diversity in the workforce. Anything in particular you're doing to serve that need?
Well, certainly we are making sure that in all of the demographics that we serve, that there is communication, marketing, and opportunities for them to know more about Talent Together to join the workforce. But I think some of our best recruitment is, again, going into the communities that they're already serving. That tends to be a diverse population of people already because they have lived in that community. They have grown up oftentimes in that community, and they represent the demographics of the young people that they serve. And so just going right into our own communities and saying, hey, do you know that this opportunity exists? Oftentimes when we share information about Talent Together, they're like, no way. Really? I can do this? And there's no cost, you know, for me. And so going into those communities and making sure that people that are interested in education know that they can serve their population, their communities, is our best marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm. You know, and something that walks alongside what you just said is when you have a community member who doesn't have any experience in navigating the bureaucracy of admissions or student loans or FAFSA, right? Now, all those bureaucratic mechanisms that are part of the pathway to an education, to know that there's a group like yours that helps make that path simpler for them, coupled with the fact that they're already in the community, maybe as a bus driver or someone, seems like a perfect marriage. And I really think is the heart and soul of the Grow Your Own initiative in terms of growing your own, because it's not about trying to find them from somewhere else.
Absolutely.
It's the people right in front of you.
Absolutely.
And when you consider how schools were formed years ago, it was all about the parents, right? The moms and dads who helped out with
Absolutely.
Sports and on the playground. This is just sort of a professional extension of that.
Absolutely.
So this is some great work you're doing. And Dr. Serena Shivers from Talent Together, I appreciate your time today on the program and keep up the great work.
Thank you. If I can do a shameless plug, please go to mitalenttogether.org if you have any interest in learning more.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Dr. Joyce Epstein from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, from Farmington Public Schools, Curtis Lovio and John Kucharik, and from Talent Together, Dr. Serena Shivers. That's all the time we have for now, but remember, there are 2 ways to spell 1 and 3 ways to spell 2. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.